Welcome to Calvary Church, where we are dedicated to loving God and loving people. If you want to know more about us, please check us out online at calvary.ca. Now let's check out this week's message from our lead pastor, Stephen McDonald.
A number of years ago in Washington, D.C., a man quietly took his place outside a metro station, pulling out his violin, taking the case, putting it on the ground, and he started to play. Now, during his performance, just over 1,000 people walked right on by while he was playing. Some stopped to listen briefly. Maybe a few people stopped to give a little bit of money, but I think it was more sympathy money than anything. And on several occasions, some little kids came by with their parents, and they were fascinated by what was going on, so they stopped or sat down, and then eventually the parents kind of pulled them on. The man on the street that morning in the baseball hat was actually world-renowned Joshua Bell. The instrument that came alive in his hands in that unexpected place was a violin worth over $3.5 million. Just 3 days earlier, there was a crowd of people that filled and packed out a Boston theater and paid probably about $100 a head just to hear him play. But today, on this day, as he played on the sidewalk, I think he took in about $32. So it wasn't quite the same. And when he finished, there was no applause, no standing ovation, nothing to acknowledge the magnificent talent that had just been on display in this unusual spot. Except for one woman. She right at the end recognized who he was, or thought she did, and she went up at the end to say hello. But then the music stopped. The violin went back in the case, and the master walked away. For nearly an hour, most didn't notice it, recognize it, or value it. Now, if you and I had been passing by on that day, I would say that it would probably be very easy for us as well to just walk right on by like everyone else. But if someone had known that he was going to be playing on that day in that spot, and maybe posted it online, I guarantee you that that moment would have been elevated. There would have been reporters and people taking pictures and videos. Even if one person had just kind of spoken up and shown honor, it would no doubt have served as a tipping point in that moment. And as word began to spread, it would have been followed by crowds of people, stopping traffic likely, resulting in a contagious viral celebration of honor. What if that same sidewalk scenario is playing out every day in our lives? What if the pace of our life, coupled with maybe a passive attitude towards greatness, is causing us to unknowingly pass by honor-worthy moments every day? On the other hand, think about this side of the coin. What if a new generation of knowers and seers consistently paused on the sidewalks of life to appreciate and to celebrate what most people don't even recognize? What if a new generation released a tidal wave of uncensored, uninhibited honor? Just think about that. Think about the change it could create. What if we were able to create a catalyst of never before seen exchanges of authentic value and recognition? Understanding who the author of 1 Timothy was reveals an important motivation in the words that we read and that we study together, and that is honor. Romans 12:10 says, "Be devoted to one another." These are Paul's words in love. "Honor one another above yourselves." The New King James Version says, "Be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love, in honor, giving preference to one another." Now, the simple definition of honor is to value, respect, or highly esteem, to treat as precious, weighty, and valuable. So is Paul saying, as he teaches us these things, is he teaching us that honor is only reserved for those who deserve it? Not at all. the everyone, the one another he's referring to here is everyone. It's all people. Kevin Gerald is a great pastor and author just over the line down in Tacoma, has a wonderful church. And he's said many times before, honor up, honor down, and honor all around. Unfortunately, I think there's a lack of awareness and even a hesitation when it comes to handing out honor to other people. Some are still hesitant to honor others for fear that someone else's promotion is going to result in their demotion. Well, what if I lift this person up? Isn't it going to make me feel smaller? You know what? I'll tell you this, that kind of insecurity in a leader's life will destroy what little influence you have. Today, it definitely doesn't seem that it's trendy to show honor. Maybe because, again, some people just misunderstand its purpose. Maybe because traditional talks about honor didn't go much further than leaving a kind of a bittersweet taste in people's ears. But I know this for sure, especially as we're exposed to popular culture today, that it's filled with sarcasm and cynicism, complaining, blaming, and criticizing. People are tearing things up all the time. People spend hours online hating on things and people they don't even know. Honor may not come naturally to us, may not be something that we feel we need to do on a regular basis. And maybe it's not in style. Maybe it's more popular today to be anti-establishment. But I honestly believe that it's time to make it an important part of our lives. And so today, as we step into chapter 5 of the book of 1 Timothy, Paul is about to give his mentee a masterclass in honor, so he understands how it actually shapes living like a leader. In verses 1 through 16, we see Paul focusing on the responsibilities of Christian families and the church's care for those people who are in need. 1 Timothy 5, verses 1 to 2 says, "Never speak harshly to an older man, but appeal to him respectfully or with honor, as you would your own father. Talk to younger men as you would to your own brothers. Treat older women as you would your mother, and treat younger women with all purity as you would your own sisters," or again, with honor. So whether they're old or young, regardless of their gender, we need to treat others with honor. Honor up, down, and all around. The way that we talk and treat others absolutely matters to God. Now, in just two short verses, the Apostle Paul covers the four relationships in every family: older men, younger women, younger women. And unlike typical instructions to these families, the seasoned veteran pastor, Paul, is telling a younger pastor how he should relate to these people and how to lead with honor. Very important. Paul's words to Timothy about leading different ages reminded me again of our early church planting days in the city of Toronto. We were a brand new church. I was a brand new pastor in the big city, trying to lead a growing multicultural church. It was exciting and terrifying all at the same time. I've said that to people many times before. We were reaching the unchurched, and I loved it. Men, women, children, single moms, young married couples. But it was a younger group of people, and that was exciting. But on one particular Sunday, an older retired company or couple that had heard about our church from a friend decided to come and visit. And so they came and kind of sit in the center of the auditorium that we were in. And so this was a big deal to me. I'm like, I loved it. I love seeing the generations. And so this particular day, I was speaking on the subject of truth. And I was using a clip from a movie that some of you may be familiar with called A Few Good Men. This starred Jack Nicholson and Tom Cruise. And so there's this pivotal scene in a courtroom where you could hear Tom Cruise screaming, "You can't handle the truth." Like, it's a powerful moment. And so I wanted that clip to be shown in the church to kind of reinforce what I was trying to teach. And so that kind of back and forth between those two men in that scene was followed by Jack Nicholson just losing his mind and just like a long string of language that you'd never want to hear in a church, right? And so the operator of the computer that was bringing up that clip, I said, it's very important that you cut it off after he says you can't handle the truth, because what comes after will just shut everything down. And she said, no problem, no problem. And so it came to that point in the message where we played the clip and that powerful word, you can't handle the truth. And I looked back, and in a split second, I could see the operator kind of looking in the other direction and being distracted for a split second. And then suddenly, you guessed it, bleep, 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 like words that you have never and should never hear on a Sunday morning filled that room. Man, I was mortified. I thought, this is the end. This is my beginning of this new church and my end of this new church. I looked down, and that senior couple that was sitting down in front of me was just kind of looking at me with a blank stare. And then I could start to hear kind of awkward laughter as other people were just kind of responding to what happened in the moment. And I just kind of said, well, that just happened. And I'm very sorry, but it was an error. I kind of owned my rookie mistake. And I went to find that couple afterwards because I thought to myself, these could have been my parents here on a Sunday morning. You know, like, are these people ever, have I scarred them for life? Are they ever going to come back to church again? And so I thought, I got to find them. I got to find them and kind of explain what happened and apologize for what happened. But by the time I got out into the foyer, they had gone. And so I made it a point that week to call them on the phone and say, hey, can I swing by this week and just talk to you guys? I'd love to talk to you about how Sunday went. And so he was on the phone. He said, yeah, we'd love to see you. Come over. We'll have a cup of tea together. I said, sure, that'd be great. So I remember I went over, and I was kind of nervously walking up the stairs thinking, what am I going to hear? Like, are they just going to just let me have it? Are they going to kind of say, you know what, I think it's best that we don't ever come back to your church again. But I went in and sat down, and I was pleasantly surprised by the response. I said, this should never have happened. I apologize. And he laughed a little bit, and he said, Pastor, you don't need to apologize to me. He said, it's quite okay. He says, I grew up working on the docks with longshoremen. And he said, that was just everyday language and conversation that surrounded me. It didn't bother me at all. As a matter of fact, you'll see us again this Sunday. We'll be back. And I was like, oh, thank you, Jesus, right? But putting yourself in someone else's shoes is always incredibly important. It's a necessary part of how we love the world around us. Now, I understand we can't please everybody. It's an impossibility. But we can still be mindful of the things that we say and the things that we do so that we're not a distraction in how people find their way to Christ. So the big idea in the first half of this chapter is that church relationships and responsibilities must be based on what's best for all that are involved. Living beyond ourselves can definitely be challenging. It's difficult when we're hurting and going through something to be aware and compassionate towards other people that are going through things, because it's just difficult to move beyond our own hurt, to understand that people are hurting around you. And yet there's a key to being relieved through the power of God of our own hurt and our weight when we lift and love on people and help them through their situation. Jesus is always causing you and I and calling you and I to move beyond ourselves, to put ourselves in other shoes, to know what it feels like to walk where they're walking. In verses 17 through 25, Paul teaches Timothy the responsibilities of leaders to the church family and to each other. And the big idea that he touches on here is that those in authority should be honored, they should be respected and supported for their efforts, but they should also be held accountable and responsible for what God has called them to do. Very important. While Timothy was given clear authority to correct the false teachings of this church in Ephesus, Paul is also clear as to the attitude the leader should have in dealing with these kinds of difficult people sometimes. Doesn't mean that he can't correct them properly or lead them. Instead, Scripture is addressing our attitude while we lead other people. The truth is, every one of us, we all wake up with the same ability to either take those in our lives for granted, or we can recognize that God is in everything and everybody all around us. Understanding this choice, in my opinion, is the beginning of living a life of love and respect while leading with honor. And the reality is that people don't know what they don't know. But when awareness is raised, it changes people's mindsets. They start to think differently. In fact, we need to understand that honor is in the Bible. It's a Bible word. Let me give you a few examples real quick. Exodus 20:12, honor your father and mother. 1 Samuel 2 and 3, those who honor me, I will honor. The God of our fathers has put it in the king's heart to bring honor to those in the house of the Lord. Ezra 7:27. Psalm 8:5, you crowned him with glory and honor. Proverbs 3:9 says, honor the Lord with your wealth. Proverbs 20, verse 3, let marriage be held in honor. And then 1 Peter 2:17, honor everyone. Honor everybody. See, I believe God is all about honor. The God we serve is all about abundant, extravagant honor, more than we can ever imagine. Probably because he created the world to function in such a way that everything is better with honor. Business is better. Family is better. Marriages are better. People serve better. Preachers preach better. Church is better. Nations are better. You are better when you lead with honor. Honor has a way of elevating everything in our lives. So we can't expect our family or our business relationships to go to the next level until we first take this step in our lives to lead a culture of honor. Now, as a church family, honor is at the core of what we believe. It always has been, it always will be moving forward. But we all have to make that conscious choice in our life to be deliberate about honoring others. Ralph Waldo Emerson once said, the purpose of life is not just to be happy. It is to be useful, to be honorable, to be compassionate, to have it make some difference that you have lived and lived well. So like Timothy, I pray that today you would choose honor in your life. You know, under the Holy Spirit's inspiration, Paul's goal seems to, in this situation, be equipping Timothy for the relational wisdom that he needs to live like a leader and be an example to the Ephesian believers, not just because he had the title of pastor or he was leading in that capacity, but he wanted them to see how he was taking the things he had been taught and putting them into practice, how he related to other people, young and old, male and female. His example spoke volumes more than the words he spoke from the pulpit or up in front of them. And that's what leaders need to know today, from the smallest church to the biggest church, that the way they live their life trumps the things that they say on any given Sunday. You will always reproduce after your own kind. So honor, it produces honor. So, who is Paul asking Timothy to honor as a leader? Well, the first one here is pretty broad. It's to honor others. And that's all the others. He starts by challenging Timothy to care for the widows, for those in need of family, of providing for our own. 1 Timothy 5, verse 3, and then jump down to verse 8 says, honor widows who are really widows. But if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially for those of his own household, he's talking about his own family, dealing with people with respect and honor, he is denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Those are strong words. When Paul said in Romans 12:10, in honor giving preference to one another, we see how broad this applies. Again, that one another he's talking about is absolutely everyone. Not just those that we feel are deserving of it. Sometimes we begrudgingly show honor, or we only give it and reserve it for those who we really feel deserve it. The truth is, we may not agree with everyone, but we should still hold them up with value for who God has created and called them to be. The people around you today, wherever you are, watching on the broadcast, whoever's sitting next to you here in the auditorium, those are God's creation and worthy of honor. Number two, we need to honor authority, whether it's government authority, as we see Paul address in 1 Timothy 2, 1-2, in his encouragement to pray for all, or for us, this would also include work authority, which Paul starts to touch on as he begins the final chapter in chapter 6, which we'll get more into next week. Paul addresses family authority and structure within the home in verses 1-2, which we read earlier. And Paul also touches on our relationship with spiritual authority within the church as they lead and teach. Verse 17 of chapter 5 says, "The elders," this is the pastors and the leaders of the church, "who direct the affairs of the church well are worthy of double honor," emphasizing their responsibility to communicate God's truth and equip the people well, especially those who work in the preaching and teaching of God's people. You know, this, I believe, was always modeled very well for me growing up as a young leader, to recognize that the people in my life, especially those in spiritual authority, were there as a gift from God to me to help me grow and develop. Now, I was never the type to kind of blindly follow somebody because they had a title. I needed to see within them the sincerity. I needed to know that they were living as a leader, taking in mind that in getting to know me was a process of understanding that this person really values me, that they honor me. And so I could understand my own understanding of honor and value had to do with the way that they worked with me, how they led me, how they mentored me. So I'm thankful for that. Number three, we need to honor age. We recognize and honor those gray hairs. Every time I go to get my hair cut, I will say, man, that's a lot of gray hair falling from my head. But I guess in many ways, I've earned it. But there are many people even beyond me in years with those gray hairs that we also honor. Our respected seniors who bring experience and wisdom to the table. Respecting my elders was something that I was just brought up with. It was modeled in my home, and so it became an important part of my life, and it's an important part of our church culture today. That's why I love Paul's encouragement to Timothy in verses 1 to 2 in how he respected and honored the older men and women as if they were his father or his mother. I can relate to that as I look at the people, even within our own church family. But I also love the fact that he doesn't stop there. He also tells them to lead with honor when it comes to the younger men and women within the church. Listen to me. You will hear me say it many more times. We will forever be a champion to next generation leaders. We believe in that. I believe in that deeply. We believe in you, all of you, that are those young leaders who are developing today. We are going to do everything in our power to help you answer the call of God on your life and make a place for you. The church is for all, young and old. And so recognizing age is an important thing in who we honor. So that's the who we're to honor in chapter 5, but how? How do we do that? How do we honor those different types of people? The first thing we need to do is honor them by putting them first. You first. No, you first. After you, you first. We honor one another. I do that to this day, going to the grocery store, walking here through church, traveling wherever I go in the world. After you. No, after you. It's something I was taught, something that was modeled for me, something I continue to move along. I was able to put this into practice this past summer when we went on an anniversary cruise, Susan and I, and every night, as you'd line up for a restaurant or, you know, kind of a buffet line. Wow. I learned to put this into practice. There is some feisty, aggressive, and clearly kind of angry grandmas out there that want to take their place right in front of you. And so you just go, okay, after you, ma'am. Like, if you don't say that, if you don't yield the floor, they'll take the floor. Mamma mia, senora, like, come on. Like, they just step right in. They're very assertive. But we need to understand in our lives that there's more to gain by honoring than there is to go to war with people. Proverbs 3:9 says, honor God with everything you own. The NIV says, your wealth. And that's not just talking about your money or your tithe. It's talking about everything that you own. Your time, your energy, your ideas. It says, give him the first and the best. Even when it comes to tithing, it's not so much about the amount as it is the order. God's saying, where am I in the order of how you invest yourself? Where am I? Am I first in your giving, in your finances, in your time, in answering the call upon your life? Where am I? Honor him as we honor others. Number two, we honor by our words. Let me say this, or let me say it this way. You can't be a person of honor and curse someone. Bitter water and good water can't flow from the same tap. Check what you say to others when they're standing right there in front of you, and check what you say when they walk away from you. Again, let's hear from the Apostle Paul on this one. Ephesians chapter 4, 29 to 30. He says, do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. Next verse, very important one. It says, and do not grieve the Holy Spirit of God. I believe we grieve the Spirit of God when we tear one another up. So let's not do it. Honor with your words. And then finally, we honor them by protecting them. And I'll close with this. Anything that you honor, you value. And anything that you value, you will protect. So let's be protectors of one another by showing honor. Why do we honor others? Because each one of us are his creation. Each one of us are his children, called to do something significant. We are the people that he values. He values you so much, he sent his son to die for the forgiveness of your sin. And when you say yes to him, he comes into your life and he changes everything. But ultimately, we honor God when we honor others and live like a leader. God's best, Calvary.